It's nearly noon, and it's time for KMXT's Midday Report. You're listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Temperature now 60 degrees. Look for scattered showers, mainly after 4 p.m. today. Mostly cloudy skies otherwise, with a high near 63 today. West wind to 10 miles per hour. Scattered showers tonight, mainly after 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies tonight, with a low around 53. West wind to 15 miles per hour tonight. Coming up on your midday report, the Alaska Marine Highway System is at a crossroads. A rather dramatic die-off in Kodiak's Buskin River. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers weighs in again on the Pebble Mine. And we look back on Sunday's Fisherman's Memorial here in the Kodiak Harbor. Pretty good weather for you mariners around the island. Marmot Island to Sitkanak, we're looking at west winds to 20 knots right now, seas to 5 feet. Inside waters, west winds to 15 knots, seas to 2 feet. Over in the Shelikof, west winds to 20 knots, seas to 4 feet.
Live from NPR News, I'm Janine Herbst. It's the second night of the Republican National Convention, with speeches tonight from First Lady Melania Trump, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and others. NPR's Don Gagne has more.
Last night, speaker after speaker warned of dire consequences of electing Democrats. Expect more of the same from a long roster of guest speakers tonight. The First Lady's remarks will be a rare campaign appearance for her. She's often at her husband's side at events, but rarely takes the microphone. Her remarks will be pre-recorded. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will address the convention via tape as well. He's currently traveling in the Middle East on official business. News of his speech has prompted critics to note in advance that it comes despite State Department policy barring participation in partisan politics and campaigning. Don Gagne, NPR News, Washington.
The father of Jacob Blake, the 29-year-old black man shot by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin, says his son is paralyzed from the waist down. As Teron Powell reports from member station WUWM, the news is likely to add tension in a city that has sometimes seen violent demonstrations over the last two nights.
Police shot Blake in the back multiple times as they were responding to a domestic dispute. Since the incident, some protesters have burned buildings and cars. The city is under a nighttime curfew, and the National Guard has been deployed. Cell phone footage that has since gone viral on social media shows Blake walking away from two officers who followed behind him, guns drawn, to the driver's side of his vehicle. As Blake leans inside, an officer is seen pulling at Blake's shirt and then firing 7 shots. It's unclear how many bullets struck Blake. The family remains hopeful his paralysis will not be permanent. For NPR News, I'm Taryn Powell in Milwaukee.
Hundreds of thousands of people in the Gulf Coast are getting ready to evacuate as Hurricane Laura takes aim at the area. The National Hurricane Center says the storm is forecast to be a powerful Category 3 when it pushes toward Texas and Louisiana. An evacuation order is out for Galveston and city services are being suspended. But some residents say they won't leave. Pat Brady, a general contractor in Galveston, does maintenance work for restaurants in the area.
I've been through two evacuations. One went real well. One, I was in my truck 24 hours, ended up having to turn around, come back to League City. So, yeah, I'm not going to do that again. I mean, just me and my dog, so we'll be all right.
At least 24 deaths are blamed on the storm in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Preliminary close numbers on Wall Street, the Dow down 59 points at 28,248, the NASDAQ up 86 at 11,466, the S&P 500 up 12. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Alaska Marine Highway System is at a critical crossroads. The State Transportation Department says COVID-19 has caused huge losses for the ferry system that will require deep cuts in its winter schedule to keep it afloat. This, as the first round of hearings on how to restructure the ferry systems begins tomorrow. A 9-member working group will take public comment on the $250,000 study commissioned by the governor. The study has already found that privatizing the system won't pencil out. That debate begins as many coastal communities brace for long gaps in service. During the 5-day comment period on the proposed winter schedule earlier this month, more than 200 people weighed in. As KMXT's Rhonda McBride reports, those who depend on the Testamina worry that ridership may not recover enough for a new system to succeed.
She rides the waves from Homer to Seldovia and from Kodiak out to the Aleutian Chain, where she's known as the Trusty Tusty. But between the mechanical problems and COVID-19, which infected the crew and kept the ferry out of service for about a month, it's been a challenge to live up to that name. When the Tusty resumed service to Kodiak in July, her loud bellow to clear the channel was a welcome sound, a signal life was on its way back to normal, that passengers, cars, groceries, and other goods were on the move again. But now, with the proposed cutbacks, some communities could lose service completely. And Captain John Mayer understands what that means.
You need to order a dinner and all you can afford is a bowl of soup. And who gets the soup? We're getting a bowl of soup with 5 spoons in it. All these communities need something.
But there are no spoons for Yuzinki or Port Lions. No longer on the route to Kodiak, which will at least see some service through the winter on the Kennecott. The mayor of Port Lions, Dorinda Kewen, says her community has no store and its airport runway is small, too small for airplanes big enough for cargo like lumber and other big ticket items.
We're back in the same boat as we were last year with no Testamina service starting October 1st and no real guess at when it'll come back because the maintenance always takes much longer than originally estimated on the Testamina.
Kewen has been working with the ferry scheduler in hopes the Kennecott will make some stops in Port Lions. She says her elders would be hurt the most. They ride the ferry to get to their medical appointments in Kodiak.
It really allows our elders to stay in the community as long as possible. Flying is difficult for elders to get in and out of the plane, and our bad weather means the ferry is their first choice for getting to appointments.
Kewen is upset that only a week was allowed for public input on the proposed winter schedule. And so is Representative Louise Stutes, a Kodiak Republican.
Give me a break. Come on. Obviously, they're not too concerned with public comment.
For the short term, Stutes is working to get some service restored at least once a month for communities like Port Lions, which has a dock that can accommodate the Kennecott. But the long-term solution, she says, is to end the competition between the ferry and the road system.
And whatever you're putting in the marine highway system is something that you don't have the opportunity to put into roads. And of course, my position is, this is a road. We don't have to pave our road. We don't have to fill potholes on our roads. What do you think the cost was to build the road between Fairbanks and Anchorage?
Stutes is part of a working group to reshape the ferry system, to find a way to take the politics out of the decision-making. And Shirley Marquardt says that's critical. She heads up an economic development group called the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference, or SWMPSE. Before that, she was the ferry system's top administrator, but her job was eliminated in a budget cut.
I'm worried that without that kind of a push from the legislature, then people will just think, you know, well, the marine highway system will stop and people will be unhappy for a little bit, but they'll get over it. They don't know the marine highway system, because that's not what's going to happen. You don't get over not being able to move back and forth between your communities.
Marquardt recently boarded the Testamina on a trip to Unalaska, a 2.5-day journey known as the ferry to the end of the world.
From Chignik up through Cold Bay, Falls Pass, Sandpoint, King Cove, Akutan, Unalaska. The scenery along the way, the volcanoes, the bays, the whales, is just something that 99.9% of the population on this planet will never see.
Captain John Mayer has steered the Tustee across the chain for many, many years, a route that requires a specialized crew.
The crew right now is very nervous about where they're going to find work. You can't feed your family on no work, so they're going to go find other jobs.
Without an experienced crew, Mayer worries the system could become even more unreliable. And those fighting for the ferry system, like Dorinda Kewen, say it's doomed to fail without dependable service.
So if you don't have people using the ferry, then that's going to give the governor even more fuel to say, well, they don't need it, they don't want it, they're not using it, we can get rid of it. It's a lose-lose proposition.
More than passengers ride on the ferry, but also the future of many communities that depend on the Marine Highway. In Kodiak, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Tomorrow's public comment period starts at 3 in the afternoon and runs through 6. A second hearing is scheduled on September 2nd. It starts at 4 and wraps up at 6. The Department of Transportation will stream both meetings on its website as well as by social media. You can testify by calling 844-586-9035. The Buskin River, one of Kodiak's most popular sports fishing streams, is clogged with dead salmon. Tyler Pollum, the area sports fishing management biologist for Kodiak, blames the lack of rain for low water levels, which have left fish starving for oxygen.
If you get a bunch of fish crowded in an area, they can, in a real localized area, they can deplete the oxygen pretty rapidly.
Pollum says biologists have counted several hundred dead pinks and tested some of them for oxygen deprivation.
If you get a bunch of fish crowded in an area, the ones we took on Saturday ranged from about 35% oxygen saturation to 72% oxygen saturation. And once you start to get down in that 30% range, that's lethal.
Pollum says the heat doesn't help. Fish deplete the oxygen faster when the water is hotter. He says this is not the first time there have been die-offs on the Buskin. The hot and dry weather of the last few years has led to low water levels and fish die-offs. Pollum says it's too early to tell what kind of impact these die-offs will have on future pink runs. This year, though, the pinks have far exceeded forecast for the run. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says the Pebble Mine can't proceed as the developers hoped. This is not an outright veto of the proposed open-pit gold mine. Pebble says it's still on course to get its federal permit, but some of the groups fighting the project say the years-long battle is as good as won, almost. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
No, it's not a ban, but mine opponents say the Corps has set conditions that are all but impossible for Pebble to meet. The issue is compensatory mitigation, a feature of the Clean Water Act that says if you want to build a project that damages wetlands or streams, you must offset that damage by improvements, ideally to the same kind of resources and in the same area. The mine and its transportation corridor would damage nearly 200 miles of streams and thousands of acres of wetlands. Pebble and its parent company, Northern Dynasty, proposed to go farther afield for mitigation, to improve the inadequate sewage systems in three southwest villages and replace culverts in Dillingham and King Salmon. The Army Corps, in a letter dated August 20, says that won't do. The agency says, if Pebble has to damage parts of the Kuktuli, it has to improve other parts of the Kuktuli. Attorney Joel Reynolds, Western Director for the Natural Resources Defense Council, says that'd be an impossible feat because there's nothing to improve in the Kuktuli that's on the scale of the damage the mine would inflict.
It's an incubator for trillions of salmon over thousands of years. And the notion that Northern Dynasty has anything to offer it in terms of improvement is ridiculous.
Pebble CEO Tom Collier says the letter from the Corps of Engineers is not a surprise, not a showstopper.
The Corps, you know, is not in the habit of sending people a letter that requires them to do something that can't be done.
Alaska's U.S. senators issued a statement praising the Corps' decision. They said the Trump administration has determined Pebble has not met the high standards required, and the senators spoke of it with finality. I agree that a permit should not be issued, Senator Lisa Murkowski said in a written statement, and Senator Dan Sullivan's remarks were much the same. I support this conclusion, he said, that a federal permit cannot be issued. Congressman Don Young says he's concerned because the federal government is erecting a major barrier to a project that would be on state land. Reporting for Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
At the Kodiak Harbor on Sunday, the crowd gathered around the fishermen's memorial to pay their respects to fishing families who have lost a loved one over the last year. Several hundred people turned out, many wearing masks. Normally, the service is held over Memorial Day weekend, but was postponed due to the coronavirus pandemic. This year, nine names were read to remember fishermen who died while at sea. Five were on the Scandies Rose, a crab boat which sank on New Year's Eve last year.
December 31st, 2019, fishing vessel Scandies Rose, Gary D. Cobbin, Jr.
A father and son were among the five who died on the Scandies Rose.
December 31st, 2019, fishing vessel Scandies Rose, David L. Cobbin.
Jerry Cobbin Kanagan lost her brother and her nephew on the Scandies Rose, followed by the death of her father, also a fisherman, 6 months earlier. She says this annual gathering helps fishing families stay strong.
I'm not standing alone. My sister isn't standing alone. My brother's children aren't standing alone. We all stand together and support one another through everything.
All in all, 19 names were read this year. Nine were lost at sea. The rest were fishermen who were lost to the community, mostly due to illnesses, but remembered for their service to the industry.
The local news is supported in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, home of the Tempur-Pedic Ergo Collection and the Tempur-Pedic Breeze, made especially for those who sleep hot. The Breeze cushions and supports you while channeling excess heat away from the mattress. Tempur-Pedic's Ergo Base allows you to move the bed into multiple ergonomic positions for sleeping or relaxing. 486-5554.
And by Arctic Physical Therapy Services, Incorporated. Professional rehabilitation for all your physical therapy needs. We repair the world's most complex machine. 813 Mill Bay Road, 486-4499.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The hearing on fish board appointees will likely be a long one. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
If need be, Alaskans can take all day to question the unconfirmed appointees to the State Board of Fisheries at a September 3rd hearing at the Legislative Information Office in Anchorage.
The meeting starts at 10 o'clock, and I have no end time.
Representative Louise Stutes of Kodiak convened the hearing for the House Fisheries and Resource Committees.
The intent is to give the public the opportunity to ask these appointees their questions and to express their concerns on the record so that their representatives or their senators have an opportunity to review their constituents' comments prior to making their vote on confirming these people.
The appointees named by Governor Dunleavy in April would normally go through a vigorous vetting process, but COVID-19 sent lawmakers home early, leaving the confirmation process in limbo. Controversy surrounds Abe Williams of Anchorage, Director of Regional Affairs for the Pebble Mine and a Bristol Bay fisherman, and Mackenzie Mitchell of Fairbanks, a sport fish guide and adjunct economics and recreation professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Both will be voting members when the Fish Board begins its meeting cycle in October to focus on Prince William Sound and Southeast issues.
I think that they should be confirmed firm prior to being allowed to sit as a full board member.
And despite 2 months' advance notice, Mitchell has indicated she might not make the hearing because she'll be working as a sport fish guide at a Kodiak camp, despite it being a short boat or float plane ride into town. If the governor calls a special session, he could add the board confirmations to the agenda. If not, the names must be renominated by Dunleavy next session. Meanwhile, they'll be voting fish board members. You can send comments now. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch. Other things besides trash attract bears into town. Here are tips to keep them away. Freeze stinky garbage and fish wastes until garbage day. Bring bird feeders inside until winter. Keep your barbecue grills clean and inside if possible. Smokers too. Don't leave smelly fish tackle around and bring in uneaten pet food. Bears like dog food better than dogs do. Be bear aware and be a Kodiak trash buster.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 33, date issued 11 a.m. on August 25th. The Duck Bay section of the Afognak District will open for a 78-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, August 26th to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 29th. There will be a 72-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 26th to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 29th in the following areas. In the Outer Carlock section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, and the Humpy Dead Man, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, August 27th until 6 p.m. Saturday, August 29th in the following areas. In the Inner Iakulik and Outer Iakulik sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, waters will be open to the stream terminus of Iakulik River, stream number 256201. The Sheratim Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, and Uganic Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Southeast Afognak, Raspberry Strait, Northwest Afognak, Shuiak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, and Northeast Afognak sections of the Afognak District, and the Big River, Hallow Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Dakovac Bay, Katmai, and Alinchak sections of the mainland district north of a latitude of Cape Kikernoy at 57 degrees, 43.5 north latitude, the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Northeast Kodiak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice: the Iqaluit Bay section of the Afognak District north of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts, south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you, Fish and Game Guy. Welcome to your Island Messenger. For Tuesday, it is the 25th day of August, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 6:55 a.m. It won't set again until 9:28 this evening, giving us 14 hours and 28 minutes of daylight. That is a loss of 4 minutes and 49 seconds compared to yesterday. 62 degrees right now here in Kodiak. We've gained a couple of degrees. We're looking for scattered showers after 5 p.m. tonight, continuing pretty much all the way through Saturday, at least. From what I see, we're looking at warm temperatures and scattered showers. Good for the gardens. Good stuff for the gardens. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide on the east side coming up at 1:07 p.m. That will be a 2-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7:39 p.m. tonight, an 8.7-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Bay tides, your low tide coming up will be at nearly 2 o'clock, 1:54 p.m. It's going to be a 3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 8:02 p.m., 14.2 feet. Looking at our marine weather, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 1,005 millibar low 40 nautical miles southwest of Middleton Island will move over to Montague Island by Wednesday afternoon before moving inland and dissipating. The resulting weather is pretty good. Marmot Island is Sitkin at Kodiak's east side, west winds to 20 knots and seas to 5 feet. Those winds are expected to switch to the southwest for a while on Wednesday, 15 knots and seas to 4 feet, back to the west Wednesday night. And on Thursday, we're looking at northwest winds to 25 knots and seas to 6 feet. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, look for west winds to 15 knots, becoming variable less than 10, seas 2 to 3 feet. Over in the Shelikof, west winds to 20 knots and seas to 4 feet right now. For tomorrow, look for south winds to 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. Well, here's a program note. Coming right up at Talk of the Rock in about 5 minutes, meet the new administrator of the Kodiak College. Jaselyn Keyes will join Betty Walters, the interim director of the college, on KMXT's Talk of the Rock coming right up. Join host Maggie Wall for that. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session tonight. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held at the Kodiak Public Library multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public, but you will be required to wear a mask and socially distance. For additional information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. The Kodiak City Council will hold their regular council meeting on Thursday. This meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. as well, but be held in the Borough Assembly Chambers. The meeting is open to the public, but again, masks and social distancing will be required. For more information, call the city clerk's office at 486-8636. The Kodiak Island Solid Waste Advisory Board will meet Wednesday, that's tomorrow, at 5:15 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. The public is welcome to attend. Again, masks are required when attending the meeting in person. For any questions about the meeting of the Solid Waste Advisory Board, call 486-9343. But again, that's happening tomorrow, 5:15 p.m., Borough Assembly Chambers. It's time for August Beartown in a Box. Kodiak Arts Council and Beartown have an epic assortment of Kodiak-made items in this month's box. Lots of Kodiak love with tie-dye, glassware, botanicals, lip balm, coasters, illustrated recipes, note cards, and more. Look for the Beartown Market in a Box for sale at the Kodiak Arts Council website. That's at kodiakarts.org. And remember, pickup is on Saturday, August 29th from 12 to 2 at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. The Caregiving 101 webinars are ongoing for people assisting and living with those suffering with dementia and Alzheimer's. The webinar that's going on Friday will be assisted living, if, when, and how. Making the decision to move to assisted living or a change of residence for a loved one is difficult. Join us in a discussion about if the time might be right, what options are available in the community, and how to prepare for the move. Again, this webinar is on Friday, August 28th. It's happening from 1 to 2:30 p.m. and is free to attend, but registration is required. For more information and to register, call Amber Smith at 586-6044. That's 586-6044. Alaska Legal Services Corporation is a nonprofit law firm that provides civil legal aid to low-income individuals and communities throughout the state of Alaska. Currently, Alaska Legal Services is assisting clients who are under threat of eviction for non-payment of rent. If you have received an eviction notice for non-payment of rent or have been served with eviction paperwork from the court, please call Alaska Legal Services intake line at 272-9431. That's 272-9431. For information about programs that help pay your rent, contact Alaska 211 by dialing 211. During these times, it's especially important to try to keep as many Alaskans housed as possible. Again, call 272-9431 if you've received an eviction notice or have been served eviction papers from the court for non-payment of rent. Things going on at the public library. Their summer reading program, Bees and Story Walk, are still available to see. Be sure to log in your reading on Beanstack or turn in your written log to enter the drawing for the grand prize. And your last day is Monday, this next Monday. Coming up on the 26th, that's tomorrow at 12 p.m., Kodiak Public Library is hosting a garden party. Come help dig, weed, and prepare the library garden for winter. Staggered arrivals are appreciated to maintain a six-foot distance from other gardeners. For more information about all this, call 486-8686.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.